Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The kayak I fish out of for bass tournaments is 13 foot 2 inches long. It's 40 inches wide. It has a pedal drive. And then I have a lithium ion powered electric motor to extend my range also. Now, I do use that motor for long runs. But when I'm fishing, I slow down. I use the pedal drive. And the same thing on the saltwater side. If I'm going to make a long run and get really back into some back marsh chasing redfish, I'm going to have that motor with me. And then I'm going to pull it up and then use my paddle and then a stakeout pole to push pole around like, to sight fish for the redfish too. So there's definitely some leaps and bounds has kind of jumped with the progression of allowing motors now and stuff like that. And you got some of the OGs that are like strictly paddle. They're like, man, it just ruins it. And it's like, hey, if it's a tool and it's allowed and it can be to my advantage, I'm gonna use it. I'm Dustin Nichols and welcome to the Tom Rowland Podcast.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's going on, everybody? We got a great podcast for you today. Dustin Nichols from Paddle and Fin is going to join us. He has his own segment on Paddle and Fin called Chasing the Tide. It's a great podcast on kayak fishing, everything you need to know about kayak fishing, techniques, safety, everything. I enjoyed catching up with Dustin. Man, we talk about kayak fishing and tournaments and the difference between different kinds of tournaments. And Dustin has also recently taken control of his health and lost a bunch of weight, done all kinds of cool stuff. I think you might be interested in that as well. But stick around for this awesome episode with Dustin Nichols of Chasing the Tide. Dustin, what's going on, man? How are you?
It's going pretty good. Just hanging tight. You know, this time of year is kind of busy. We got tournaments ramping up and stuff like that. So all the fun. Trying to juggle on the bass side and the saltwater inshore side is definitely fun.
So you're doing, are all the tournaments that you do out of kayaks or do you do tournaments out of other boats too?
I focus mainly on the kayak scene, but I do have friends with boats and I get asked from time to time to jump in with them.
Yeah.
On some of the inshore stuff, you know, redfish and trout tournaments around here in the Coastal Bend area of Texas.
Right.
Cool deal.
Okay, so let's talk about the kayak tournament scene, because that's kind of interesting. I mean, we have some tournaments in Florida that I know about, but it seems like maybe it's a little more active over your way. Or is that true? I don't know. I certainly fish in a lot of tournaments, but not kayak tournaments.
It's pretty hectic this time of year. Like I said, you could probably fish a tournament every weekend.
Yeah.
Just about. I know my wife probably looks at my schedule I hand her and she's probably like, oh my gosh, am I going to get a vacation out of this one or something, right? You know?
Yeah.
But yes, we have quite a few local clubs, you know, that have bass tournaments and they have like a trail series that where they, you know, have a schedule set of, you know, three or four tournaments and you work towards an angler of the year title and then you have a championship. And then also what I'm fishing this week coming up is Professional Redfish League has a kayak division. It's okay. A two-man team event. It's the best five redfish over 2 days. And it's a live weigh-in. Even on a kayak, you have to keep your redfish alive and bring them into a live weigh-in to be released.
Right.
The bass tournaments is a little different because you have a certified measuring devices that you use from companies that make them, like a bunk board, a hog trough, catch products. And you measure your fish by inches, and just your five best fish aggregate. Mm-hmm. And you have a unique identifier code you get the night before the tournament. You have to have that on a identifier, a piece of paper, a little card, and you have that written down. So that's a unique number to that tournament. So you can only, you know, submit fish that you catch that day. Right. You know, especially if it's a live event where you're fishing a certain lake or fishing a certain body of water with river estuaries tied into it. And then there's saltwater events that have that also. You know, we have some month-long challenges that you have a month to feel like a five redfish stringer, and it's your best, you know, slot fish 16 to 27 inches. It runs on the Gulf region and then up the Atlantic seaboard, wherever redfish can be caught. That's the Kayak Saltwater Series. I'm actually the communications director for them.
Okay.
So shameless plug right there, but you know, it's fun to get these things going and be involved. The camaraderie in these events is what really drew me into them. Huh. You know, meeting everybody's super cool. You know, the payouts can be pretty good. You get 100, 200 people in the tournament at $75 to $150 a pop. And you're talking, you can walk away with, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 in first place, which
right
is
on.
Pretty good. And then some of the bigger national events that are a little more involved, you know, $250 to $300, you know, entry fees. And you have, you know, you'll have 200 plus anglers fishing some of those at times, you know, kayak bass fishing. Hobie sponsors a trail of Bass Open Series. And then Bassmaster also has a trail for kayaks now also. And they're going to have the championship in, Possum Kingdom Lake here in Texas in June for the Bassmaster Classic for kayak side.
Okay. And so how far would those tournaments pay out? You got 300 anglers, 200 anglers, or maybe it's one of the smaller ones with 100. How many places are they paying out?
They usually pay out 10%. 10 to 15%. I know Bass pays out, I think at 30 places, they just paid out on Eufaula.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a trail at Hartwell that's coming up. I know they're going to have a stacked field there too. There's quite a few, you know, guys that actually travel around and do this full time. You know, I wish I could do that. I'm still stuck with my big boy job for right now, but you know, when I can get away, I'll travel. I went to the, Kissimmee Chain of Lakes in January and fished a couple of events there. And, you know, I have kayak, wheel travel.
Yeah.
It's my motto for
wow.
sure.
So the evolution of the kayak tournament scene, how long has, I mean, I'm a little bit embarrassed because we fished the professional redfish tournaments a long time ago and certainly fish a lot of tournaments in the Florida Keys and that, but I'm really kind of taken by surprise a little bit about how many tournaments you're talking about and all these different trails. And I just don't have my finger on the pulse. So how long has this evolution of these tournaments been going on with the kayak fishing?
I think like the majority of it started as far as, you know, the catch photo release, the CPR tournaments, mm-hmm. where you're actually, you know, taking a picture of the fish on the bump board for measurements.
Right.
Chad Hoover with Kayak Bass Fishing really got that ball rolling. He was kind of the initiator of that kind of deal because some of the lakes, you know, were like off limits kind of where you couldn't keep the fish or retain them or something. So you had to have a way that you couldn't weigh in live fish. You had a way to have to measure them and come up with that kind of idea. I know that's been around since, I want to say 2012 or 13, mm-hmm. maybe. And then some of the other series, Bass just came on last year. Hobie's been around with their Bass Open Series for, I think, 3 or 4 years now. But the tournament scene itself, as far as grassroots stuff, been around with local clubs and all that kind of stuff, has been going pretty strong. We had a trail here in Texas called Cats Kayak Anglers Tournament Series, and they were one of the OG clubs, mm-hmm. for sure, and been around for a while. And then there's like the Bayou Coast Kayak Anglers or Bayou Coast Kayak Club in in Baton Rouge area or near New Orleans.
Yeah.
Louisiana is what I meant to say. I'm getting the cities all jumbled there. they're one of the biggest and longest running kayak clubs in the country. And they definitely been around for a while doing some really cool events also. And then, you know, in the IFA, we had kayak divisions there.
Yeah.
Then there's been like Paddlepalooza was Bayou Coast. And then some of the other events in Florida. I know there was a big event in Jacksonville, Florida there for a while. And then the DOA had a little paddler series for a little while in Central Florida, yeah. like Mosquito Lagoon area and all that. And, you know, there's just been stuff here and there. I didn't really hit it until about 2016, 2017. I had already been kayak fishing a while, but I was like, oh, there's all these tournaments. I said, oh, this can be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You know, cause I did a few of some tournaments back in my younger years. I grew up in Southeast Georgia, fishing the Autumn Hall, Satilla Rivers, and some of the, you know, inshore estuaries there, St. Simon's Island. And, you know, fishing was in my veins, you know, my granddad and everybody else, uncles, they were always asking me to go. So it was always there. And then being around the water, it was just a given, you know, it's just something to do, you know, it's fun.
Right. So how would you compare, like, you know, every time you get into these little nuanced things, like you go to a different little segment of the fishing world, you get a different crowd. Like if you go to a kingfish tournament, that's a different crowd than a bass fishing tournament. You go to a bass fishing tournament, that's a different crowd than maybe a fly fishing tournament. How do you think that the, like when you first started doing these kayak tournaments and finding out about them, having done some other, you know, regular tournaments, what's the scene like? What kind of a person does it draw in, you know, different than maybe a regular bass tournament or a regular redfish tournament?
I mean, all walks of life too. I mean, I got friends that are lawyers that fish these,
sure.
You know, I got guys that are, work in law enforcement or military. I mean, it's same thing, you know, just anybody that loves the water and loves the outdoors, you know, from your lower level of events, like the grassroots stuff. And that's where you kind of feed. That's the whole key to the successful tournaments is having these grassroots events at local levels. And then those guys that are excelling in those it's like a feeder into the mm-hmm. bigger stuff. Oh, I want to branch out. I want to go fish something a little bigger and challenge myself on new bodies of water. And that's the whole thing behind it was it growing like that organically through the local clubs, which is really cool.
Yeah. Is that how you started with just a local club?
Yes. Yes, sir. I sure did. It was a San Antonio area, San Antonio kayak fishing group had some stuff. And I fished some local stuff through the American Builders Association here locally in where I'm at in Texas near Point Comfort, Port O'Connor area.
Okay.
And
it's nice there.
And there were some events there that I was able to fish, you know, back when I first kind of really got into the swing of things. But, you know, the whole thing that kicked it off was when I moved to Texas, you know, it was like, what's all these people doing getting out of their boats and walking and wading around?
No kidding. I wondered the same thing.
Because I grew up in Georgia, you know, coastal Georgia, you got 7-foot tide swings and you step off into the mud, you're up to your neck. You know, it's like, I'm not wade fishing there except on like the marsh flats on you know, flood tides and stuff like that. You can actually get back in there and do some stuff like that. But that was the whole thing. It was like, look at this. This is like opportunity for me to walk in and fish somewhere. You know, say if I, you know, just stumbled upon some marsh systems and you can walk in and fish these little flats and stuff. And then I was like, you know what, if I could expand my area without a boat, because a boat to me, you know, is I've been there kind of with friends and stuff. It stands for bust out another thousand.
Yeah, it can. It certainly can.
The upkeep and all that, then the storage and everything else, you know. So I wanted something a little more cost friendly, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna get a kayak, and it just kind of blossomed from there and took off.
Yeah, and so in these tournaments, are you able to get out of your kayak, or do you have to stay in the kayak the whole time?
Some of the inshore tournaments for redfish and trout, flounder, kind of the slam kind of stuff. There are certain tournaments that will allow you to get out and wade as long as your kayak is tethered to you.
Right.
So you have like a little drag rope attached to your like wading belt or something. Right. But like And the bass tournaments, you know, you're pretty much in there. Yeah. You're pretty much stuck in there. But as a, you know, the kayak I fish out of for bass tournaments is 13 foot, 2 inches long. It's 40 inches wide. It has a pedal drive. And then I have a lithium ion powered electric motor to extend my range also. Now I do use that motor for long runs, but when I'm fishing, I slow down. I use the pedal drive. And the same thing on the saltwater side. If I'm going to make a long run and get really back into some back marsh chasing redfish, I'm going to have that motor with me, and then I'm going to pull it up and then use my paddle and then a stakeout pole to push pole around like to sight fish for the redfish too. So there's definitely some leaps and bounds that's kind of jumped with the progression of allowing motors now and stuff like that. And you got some of the OGs that are like strictly paddle. They're like, man, it's ruins it. And it's like, hey, if it's a tool and it's allowed and it can be to my advantage, I'm going to use it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like if a motor is allowed and you say that you don't want to use a motor, I mean, you're not going to win. Like the range of how far you can go in a day opens up. I mean, maybe occasionally somebody might win without a motor, but yes. I would think that if it's allowed, man, you just change the game like considerably. So do they have tournaments that like no motors are allowed? It's just straight old school.
There's a few trails that only allow, you know, human powered pedal driven or paddle driven. The Hobie Bass Open Series is one. They kind of focus on just that for right now. But most of the other trails are all, you know, allowing electric motors now. And a lot of the saltwater tournaments over here made a shift also. Allowing us to use the motor.
It has to be electric.
Cool, it definitely extends the range. Yes, has to be electric. No gas. Right. No gas power.
So then, I mean, at some point, it defies logic and defeats the purpose when you put so many batteries in your boat to extend the range further and further and further. Now the thing's so heavy that it's not worth that. So there's a real fine balance. Are you and everybody else using those lithium batteries? Is that's what you got right there? Is that the Torquedo thing?
That's the Torquedo battery. I'm on their Torquedo's team.
Right.
I'm very fortunate to be part of them. This is the little 9.5-10 pound battery, the 915 watt hour that powers the 403. I can get about 30 miles range with this battery.
30 miles.
Yes, sir. And that's just going, you know, 3.5 miles an hour.
So is there,
if I peg it out and run it around, it's a little less, but, you know, it's great range.
So, I mean, but you could conceivably carry extra batteries, right?
Yes, sir. I carry two.
So you,
I carry two. No, you can't.
You can't.
Yeah. That's the only thing that limits you on the kayak is your weight.
Right.
You know, you want to try to keep it minimal to the gear you take, but, you know, I have a rod staging, crate that carries some Plano boxes, some 3700s. I can put four in there if I need to. And I'll carry in bass tournaments, I'll have as many as 10 rods on my kayak just so I don't have to stop and retie. I'll have stuff specifically dedicated for each technique. Same thing for inshore fishing. I'll have, like, if I'm fishing grass flats, I'll have a gold spoon. I'll have a top water. I have a wake bait. I'll have a plastic, like a weedless plastic presentation, and possibly a popping cork with a shrimp imitation, you know, so I can just boom, boom, switch them out real quick, depending on what the fish are doing, where I've got to sit there, retie and waste time. Cause time management is like a big key
in
kayak fishing and organization too. So having stuff in place to where, you know, you're going to be able to grab it. It's going to be in that same spot every time. When I want to grab my net, when I want to grab my pliers, it's right there where I have them in that little staging area. You know, there's so many cool tools that are made now specifically for kayaks that it's really cool how far it's come along.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like when you go to iCast or something and you pass by some of the kayak things, man, I mean, it's every accessory you've ever seen, ever imagined, like going on the kayaks and paddle boards and paddleboard kayak hybrids. I mean, it's really cool where it's going. And I think that it certainly opens up the sport to people that either don't want a boat, don't have room to store a boat, can't afford a boat. But man, I tell you what, when you rig out one of these kayaks with electronics, 10 rods, all this other stuff, I mean, that starts to add up to a boat, right? I mean, it is a boat. It's just a different style of boat. And you can spend a lot of money on those things now.
Yes, you can. There is more of a minimalist approach. I'll just do a grab and go trip every now and then after work when I come off night shifts. And I'll just have a couple rods with me, a paddle, my life vest, my 50, and just one little couple bags of plastics and a couple of, you know, jig heads and a couple top waters. And,
right.
You know, you can't get away from that. It's just too easy to do. And then being that close to the action and to the water, when you're out there just cruising through the back lakes and then over the flats and everything, and you can just drift over fish and they don't even see you. And it's just like, it's really cool, you know, being that close to the action.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you get in a regular boat and fish these tournaments with your buddies, what's that like? Like when you get used to having all your stuff perfectly organized, exactly where you want it, and in this rig, and then you get in a regular boat, do you enjoy that or not? I mean, like, is it just weird or what? Like, do you prefer the kayak?
I prefer the kayak. I mean, I still enjoy, you know, just competition, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. I grew up surfing, Eastern Surfing Association, and competing in there. I competed, you know, in the military surfing championships. I'm a veteran of the Marine Corps. I'm stationed in Hawaii. So I was, you know, I was avid in surfing and skateboarding. I still skateboard now. Nice. I like to ride the pools and the bowls and everything there, you know, and it keeps me going. And just same with the kayak, you know, keeps me paddling. But, you know, it's just a great sport. I just love to compete. So yeah. If I can compete in a boat and there's a tournament that doesn't conflict with my kayak tournaments, you know, I'll jump in and fish those. Or if the boat tournaments will allow a team of us kayakers to fish against the boaters, we'll gladly do that too.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's interesting that you said that a lot of the redfish tournaments are two man tournaments and kayaks. So you can go separate ways and then each of you is responsible for one fish, or how does that work? Do you have to stay close together?
You still have to be in sight of each other.
Okay.
And say if my partner skunked and I caught the two fish, then we can still weigh both of them in, you know, cause in Texas we do have a three fish.
Right. That's the difference.
Limit. So if say I'm fishing a tournament coming up, it's a five fish over 2 days. Say if we skunked the first day and then I could only catch three the second day. So he'd have to catch two, or he'd have to catch three and I catch two, cause you know, we only have a three fish limit.
Right. Yeah, and that's so different. That's why
would hinder us.
You know, that's why a lot of people have asked, like, why is the redfish thing like a two-man team thing? And it's because in most states, in Florida and Louisiana, it's a two fish limit, or at least it was when we were fishing it. And I mean, a one fish per person limit within the slot, and so 18 to 27 inches. So in order to make it interesting, you really need more than just one fish. You need like two. And so that's why it was a two-man team tournament. But it's interesting with a kayak tournament. And I didn't realize that it was a three fish limit in Texas. But that's pretty cool. So how in the world did you get stationed in Hawaii as a Marine? That seems like the most awesome possible station. I have a friend. Well, it's my son's friend, and he's in the Army, and he's stationed in Hawaii. And I have another friend that's a retired Marine, and he was stationed in Hawaii for a long time. But man, that just seems like, how did you do that? Is that ultra luck, or did you very, very targeted? What did you do to get that station?
It started in our MOS school. That's our training for what we're going to do in the service. I went to a communications electronic school in 29 Palms, California. I was there for 15 months. It was one of the longer schools to go through. I'd be repairing, you know, the communications gear, this was back in the early 90s. I think it was 1989 when I actually left 29 Palms. But we put in our top three picks for a duty station. So I wanted to be near the coast because, you know, being a surfer, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I said, oh, there's a base on Kani, Oahu. I'm putting in for that. And then I put in for Camp Pendleton and then put in for, you know, North Carolina Camp Lejeune, which access to the Outer Banks and everything. So, you know, I did pretty well in school. I was up there in the class and everything. And so I, you know, they were calling everybody's names out at our graduation when we're leaving. And they kept saying, you know, Okinawa, Okinawa, Camp Lejeune, Camp Lejeune, Camp Lejeune. And all of a sudden they said, you know, my name, Dustin Nichols, Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station, Kaneohe, Oahu, Hawaii. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got it. Like, I don't know if it was the luck of the draw or doing well in the school. You know, it's just one of those deals that just panned out.
Man, that is awesome. You know, I'm getting ready to take my daughter there for her senior trip, and we're going to Hawaii, and we're going to fly into Honolulu and out of Honolulu, and we're going over to Kona and Hilo. But other than that, we don't have any plans really. So man, I'm open for cool things to do, in Hawaii. But I've been to Hawaii twice, both times on the way to Christmas Island, and man, I stop in there, you look around. And the second time I went with my boys, and we did some hiking. We went up on Diamond Head. We did some surfing on the North Shore, and it was just awesome. And I thought, man, I got to come back to Hawaii. It's got to be one of the coolest places on earth. I mean, it's got, for somebody that likes to be outside, it is such an incredible place. You can hike to these waterfalls, you can climb mountains, mm-hmm. you can be on top of these volcanoes, you can go and be in this huge drop off. I mean, talk about kayak fishing wonderland. I mean, you could be offshore yes. in a few paddle strokes and be fishing for like real fish, like marlin yes. and like serious stuff. But I mean, it's just an amazing place. Like, are there any absolutes I should do while I'm there? If I get around where you were
on the big island, you know, they have the bike tours. Mm-hmm. They come down off of, Mauna Kea, the yes. mountains up there. We had a army training facility. We went up there, Pohakaloa, that we did some exercises there, but we helped out during the Ironman, and it was pretty cool going down there around Hilo and all that. Like you said, yeah. you're going to be there, or Kailua Kona on that side of the island. Also, there's a fun little surf break there called Banyans. It's pretty good little wave, depending on what time of year. But yeah,
that's
there's always
I need a little wave. Yeah.
The local stuff is the cool stuff. If you can find a little local poke shops and the little, you know, off the wall, you know, food trucks and stuff like that. Yeah. That's the stuff I like to see. Cause I love food.
But, yeah. Well, my daughter does too. I asked her what she wanted to do. She said, I just want to eat Asahi bowls and surf. And I said, sounds good to me. Like, that sounds like a perfect vacation for me. Let's do it. And then we're going to do some hiking.
There's some
stuff.
fun little waves on the South Shore. You know, in the summertime, you get a little more southern energy during the summer. And so you can fish around, like surf around, like the Diamond Head Point has a break called Suicides, and then there's graveyards. And then like around where town is at, Waikiki area, you know, there's canoes and queens, and then there's number threes and pops and kind of kaisers, and then Alamoana bowls and some mm-hmm. stuff in between there. Like to hang out and just ride a longboard, though, that canoes place is kind of, you know, the thing to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's over, like around Honolulu, right? Or Waikiki?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Waikiki area. Yeah,
we're gonna move around, because I have been there before, but I've never seen the Big Island. And we also want to go and do the hiking on Kauai. And there's yes. some really amazing, amazing looking hiking over there. The Nepali Coast hike, which yes, is like 22 miles long. That seems incredible, man. I mean, just the pictures I see of that's right up our alley. That's what she wants to do. That's what we want to do. So we're going to give it a shot. I don't know. Sounds fun.
Sounds like a great trip. You know, Kauai, I think, is that the one they call the Garden Isle? I can't remember.
I think so.
The Garden Island. Yeah, I believe so. I think they don't call it that for a reason, you know. Right. So I haven't been to Kauai, but I've just heard it's absolutely beautiful over there.
Yeah, me too, man. You know, I'm really
that's one of the places I did get to make it to. Yeah. Yep, should be a fun trip. I know she'll enjoy that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Do you think if you were stationed there now, knowing what you know about kayak fishing, that you would you would go for the biggest fish you could possibly catch? I mean, there are, you know, videos of guys catching marlin and stuff on kayaks. It's amazing.
Yes. If I knew what I know now and was over there, you know, it would happen because we do it here. I mean, we got to have the right conditions and stuff like that, but we beach launch and fish like the short rigs near shore, current seam rips and grass lines and stuff like that. Also, we do a lot of king fishing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get some ling, cobia, uh-huh, and some snapper on some near shore rocks and stuff like that. And I do have a friend that caught a sailfish off of Corpus Christi. He caught a, you know, it was 89 inches, I believe.
Wow. How far out do you have to go to get to, you know, 100 feet of water on the Texas coast?
Oh, now that's a good that's a good way.
Yeah. So, but he caught a sailfish.
10 miles, or 10 miles.
10 miles. Sure. And then, but your buddy caught a sailfish closer in than that?
I believe he was only about 4.5 or 5 miles offshore.
So what,
he was 65 or so, yeah. I think.
In the Keys, we have a lot of different situations where the sailfish will push into 20 feet of water, 30 feet of water, and they'll be chasing the ballyhoo. But I mean, our reef is just right there. I mean, you're in 20 feet of water, but the reef is really just right there. So, I mean, it sounds like you're fishing them up on the beach, but you're really not. I mean, you're still like 3 or 4 or 5 miles out, but the water's shallow. And it's one of the coolest things ever because you can run along and all of a sudden there's this giant black fish over white sand and you can throw to them in 20 feet of water. And it's pretty, pretty cool when that's happening. But it would be hard in a kayak, I think, but maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I think with the kayak fishing, you know, you certainly have to kind of pick your spot way more so than a boat. Like, you're going to say, okay, well, this is where we're fishing because it's going to take me all day to get there. I mean, you're just moving so much slower than a boat, even if you have the torpedo motor and you're pushing along. I mean, a boat can say, let's go check that out. I don't like it. Let's move. And they, you know, run 20 miles. That's got to be one of the things about the kayak fishing that you got to kind of make a plan. And for the most part, I would imagine that you're sticking to it rather than making some giant deviation. You're going to make do with what you've kind of in this little area that you've picked, right?
Yes. Yeah. Some like on freshwater events and well, saltwater events too, if there's open boundaries, some events are, you know, shotgun launch, you all launch from the same place, but a lot of them are called a roadrunner. That's where there's launches. If it's public access, you can launch anywhere. So, I mean, there's been days I've had 2 hours left and threw a Hail Mary and went relocated and filled my limit and finished well. You know, there's
so
stuff
you
like
mean
that.
You can take the kayak out of the water, trailer it, or put it on your truck and go somewhere else and then put in again? Okay. Yeah.
Yes, sir. And that's just, you know, limit your time. You got time constraints and stuff. You got certain time you have to have your fish uploaded or certain time you got to be at weigh in. You got certain times to check in and stuff like that. So then you start dealing with time management, which is a big factor, not having those 300 horses behind you pushing you along at 75 right. miles an hour.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's the same factor in that type of fishing. It's all about the time management. And when we were fishing Texas, for example, we knew the water of Louisiana. So if we're fishing like, you know, Northern Texas, Sabine area or something like that. You know, like, are we going to look for fish over here? Or are we going to run, you know, all the way back to Louisiana to where we know there are fish? And maybe we can only fish for 30 minutes, but we feel like in 30 minutes, we're going to have a better shot of catching 2 big fish there than 6 hours over here because we've never been here before. Right. So there's this, you know, this whole, I mean, it kind of gets me kind of excited to think about it because it was some of the most exciting fishing times that I think I've ever had of like, do we have enough fuel? If we don't have enough fuel, where are we going to refuel and how long is that going to take? Yeah. And is that even legal? Because in some tournaments, you're not allowed to do that. And so if it is legal, like, should we go spec that out first and make sure there's going to be somebody at the gas dock or are we going to be, because if there's not anybody at the gas dock, I mean, we just shot ourselves in the foot, right? So maybe go over there and leave them a 20 and be like, hey, look, about 2 o'clock tomorrow, we're going to be coming by here. How about you be right here ready for us? You know, I mean, but it's all time management, just like you're talking about.
Yes, sir.
It's just a different thing. Like, you still got to make it back in time and you're still trying to wring every second of the day out, you know, but It's just different. It's just different. How much does physical ability play into the top five or six guys on these kayak tournaments? Like, are the, if you're in really good shape, is that paying off?
Well, I mean, it does to a certain extent. You know, kind of goes hand in hand, especially if you're, you know, paddling and pedaling, you got to go long distances and that. It's definitely going to be to your advantage to be in better shape. It definitely will. And I've just recently kicked off, you know, doing intermittent fasting. I kind of let it take over and, you know, kind of got a little out of shape. I work inside. I run a big control, you know, got like 10 computer screens. I run a chemical process through like reactors and compressors and all that stuff. So I'm sitting down for a 12-hour shift. And, you know, I had to make myself, you know, get up and eat better because, you know, it's like working split shifts, you know, in the middle of the night, I'll get hungry. Like, oh, I'm going to have that bowl of Fruity Pebbles. And that's not the best thing to do, you know, and being that I'm old stubborn jarhead, you know, I got the mind over matter part where I can tell myself, look, dude, you need to check yourself and get in shape. And I've been on a pretty good journey so far. We got a guy that started a kind of workout program called the Kayak Beast program.
Nice.
And he's an avid kayak fisherman. He's a kinesiology major. He was a Coast Guard, retired Coast Guard. Entire coastie, and he kayak fishes, and we kind of met through this whole group of people. And that's the cool thing about the networking in the kayak community too. And I'm in a beta program. He started out, I'm limiting my caloric intake. I know you talk a lot about fitness, so I was pretty stoked on that when I saw some of the stuff about CrossFit and all that. So we're doing some high impact metabolic exercises and, you know, doing an intermittent fasting. I'm doing a 16 with an 8-hour eating window. I've cut my carbs. I've cut my sugars. I quit drinking sodas. I think this morning I'm down almost 17 pounds in about 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Like, yes, sir.
That's awesome.
It's insane.
That I did is like really a little awesome.
I did like a fiber cleanse through Advocare for the first 10 days. And then I've just been, you know, high protein, limiting carbs. I'm only doing like natural sugars, like through fruits and vegetables and different things like that. Like substituting my bread. I use a red bell pepper and put a little cream cheese with everything bagel seasoning with like meat and cheese, make a sandwich like that. Brown rice, quinoa, couscous and stuff like that instead of the white rice. And,
nice. And so when you know, when you're going potato. To your 12-hour shift, are you packing food with you now? Like,
yes,
so
sir.
That you have what you need and you're eating in the time that you're supposed to?
In the window. Yes, sir. I do that. And on the kayak too, especially when you're on the water for 8+ hours during these tournaments, you know, I got to have something, you know, to keep my energy, keep me going. Yeah, so, you know, it's jerky. And then Quest makes a decent protein cookie. I'm not affiliated with them or anything, but that's the peanut butter one is probably my most favorite one I've found. And it's something that, you know, gives me a little fuel on the water. You know, fruits, I'll pack a little small ice, you know, collapsible ice chest and pack some fruit and some veggies and stuff in there too lately.
Nice.
So that's definitely been helping out. Just mainly staying hydrated and flushing your body and keeping that water in you and all that. So
I was
up to the biggest I've ever, I still felt like I carried my weight well because I've always been kind of stocky guy anyways, but you know, when I stepped on that kit scale and saw that number, I was like, oh my gosh, you know? how did I get there?
That's what it takes, man, is at some point you just got to be like, okay, not another pound is going on that scale. Like, I'm going to do anything and everything necessary to be going the other way, right? Like, but it sounds like you ran into a, you know, great resource. And you got like a group going? Like, there's a group of you?
Yeah, there's a group. I think there's 14 or 15 of us in this beta program. He's got a little app he started. And their first group, I think there's a couple guys that have lost over 20 pounds already.
Nice.
And everybody seems to be doing well because there's people that just adjusted their eating times that didn't change their habits. And they're still dropping a couple of pounds a week, which is pretty cool because it's just by just an adjustment. And it worked out. And then they're still doing some of the exercises and stuff like that. I started a couch to 5K kind of deal with my wife and been running more than I have in a long time. So I've been making myself run 3 times a week, You know, it's just intervals, like you walk for a minute and a half,
sure,
run for 3 minutes, walk for, just to get it built back up in my, I feel like I have a lot of stamina just because I paddle.
Right.
Sometimes well, I'll paddle six, 7 miles, you know.
And then the surfing,
and then
too.
I can, like, yeah. Oh, I haven't surfed. I haven't surfed in about a year and a half. I kind of got burned out and took a break.
Okay.
The fishing took over like big time. Is
yeah.
What it did.
Yeah.
And then Texas, the waves. You know, we deal with a lot of junky wind swell a lot, so it kind of got just burned out on it. I still will travel. You know, Nicaragua, Costa Rica. You know, been around there, Central America, some good stuff. Baja California. You know, all down that way, Baja, Mexico, all that good stuff. But, you know, the fitness in kayaking does, it does go hand in hand when you look at it. You
well,
know,
it seems like it would. I mean, it seems like it would, like if you're out there and I don't know, maybe you don't have as much, maybe you don't have a motor at all, or you don't have as much juice as you want. And you know, man, I really need to be on the other side of this bay right here, but it's into the wind. Do I really want to do that? Like, yeah, if you're in great shape, you're like, hell yeah, let's do it. If you're not,
let's go.
I'm just going to see if I can catch another one right here. And maybe you do better right there, right where you are. I don't know. Maybe it's not necessary, but it sure does seem like that is a very physical, you know, and it physically demanding thing, that the better shape you're in, the better it would pay off. That's what I would think. But like, I'm not a kayak tournament fisherman, but I mean,
for sure, I can tell a difference just recently with having to like reach down and grab stuff and having to reach around into my crate and grab gear. I could just tell maneuverability wise that it's gotten a lot better.
Also, wow, I don't have that pillow right there.
A little bit of pillow right there. Kind of.
That's cool, man. So do you guys get together and exercise together, or is it mostly the group?
We go through a Zoom.
For eating?
It's a Zoom. We get on Zoom. And then we had a workout last night. We had a little three circuit with five exercises we did last night in about 25 minutes just to get your metabolism,
awesome.
Get your heart rate up.
That's awesome.
And we do it on Zoom. We kind of interact. And then I got on and shared, you know, the group. It's a, you know, we got a Facebook group. So we get on there and share recipes and stuff like that. I worked as a chef for many years. I didn't throw that in when I had sent an email over. But yeah, I love food. I love to cook. So I threw together some recipes and stuff and I went live with them and kind of shared them a quick stir fry, you know, something a little healthier.
Nice.
Yeah, so you probably
kind of piqued the interest of most of the people in the audience. Cause we do have a lot of people that listen to this that really want to get in better shape. And a lot of people find themselves just like you did, like, what the hell happened? I was a Marine. Like, I was in phenomenal shape. And then what is this?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on? I don't even know what happened. And they want to get back in shape and they don't really know how. Like, what's this thing called? Is it something that other people can join, or is it still in the beta?
Yeah. There's the beta group that he's working on right now, the beta process. But what is his kayak fitness? I'm sorry.
That's all right.
There's a Facebook group called Kayak Fishing Strength and Fitness. And it's a group. You can go on there and look it up on Facebook and check it out. And it's a private group, but you can be added. I think you got to answer a few questions to get in there.
Yeah.
But the guy's name is Luke Prentice. You know, he's posting updates of how we're all doing and all everything like that on this page here. And then we're all just kind of sharing info and stuff on there. So it's pretty cool. I'm pretty impressed with the outcome so far. And it's an 8-week program. So I'm in week two.
Oh, well, so, dang, man, you're having some unbelievable progress in 2 weeks. But I don't know what that sounds like to me is it sounds like that is incredibly sustainable because you have created this group of people around you that have similar in interests. Like, you guys are all kayak fishermen, right? So like,
yeah.
It's not like you're just hanging out with a bunch of people you don't know or like. Like, that seems like when people ask me, like, what do I need to do to get rid of this? Like, I got to get back in shape. The first thing I always say is like, well, what do you like to do? Like, what's fun? Like, do you like to play tennis? Like, whatever it is. Like, if that's what you like to do, then why don't you do something that you like to do to get back in shape instead of like something that you hate? Like, if you don't like it, and you don't like the people that you're around and you don't like the commute over to the gym, you're probably not going to stick with it very long. Like, what about finding something that you like? Like, this sounds perfect, man. You got the right people around you. You got somebody that knows what they're doing. You're having great results. That sounds like something that, you know, is easy to stick with. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, for sure. And then he started out pretty much the same way. He's like, man, how'd I let myself go like this? You know,
he did.
And
the kinesiology major.
Yes, sir. Yeah. He's like, man, I got a little out of shape, you know? And he's like, you know, I'm going to do something. And he started doing this intermittent fasting and this training, you know, higher impact metabolic, you know, circuits and stuff like that. And then he's like ripped. He's jacked. He's like, got 6-pack. I was like, man, if I just get a 4-pack, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Right. Of course. So what about the time that you're eating? Like for people that don't know what he's talking about, like, it's intermittent fasting. So you'll have a period of the day that you're not eating, this period of, like you're saying, 16 hours, and then a period of 8 hours of the day that you're allowed to eat. So how did you choose what time of the day that you were going to eat?
I was just like, you know, it's 16 and 8. So I wanted to kind of have a window to where after I woke up and got, you know, I'm not a big, huge breakfast person, but I'd like to eat some oatmeal with fruit in it and stuff like that. But I was like, you know, I could kind of skip a meal and kind of miss more of the morning, you know, eating time. So I went from 10:45 to, you know, 8 to 6:45. I was about to say 6:45 in the evening. I was about to give y'all military time.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like that was a little better fit because I do start off with a little small, my bigger meal is earlier in the day and I finish with a lighter meal in the evening. Every now and then I will throw a meal replacement shake in there in the middle, or depends on what's going on. Or maybe I'll eat that, use that as my first meal of the day if I'm fishing, if I'm on the water or something. But you know, it was a little adjustment getting used to it, but you know, it's not that bad. I got an app, fitness track, fasting tracking app. I'm keeping up, and I'm keeping up my caloric intake through another My Fitness Pal or something. One of those apps that track. And it syncs with the app that he has. So we can log all our stuff and then log our exercises, log our fasting times and everything like that. So it's actually a pretty cool little deal.
Yeah. Sounds great, man. Well, good job. That's awesome, man. That's some great
results
for a couple of weeks in. That's amazing.
I'm hoping to keep it rolling.
Oh, I'm sure you will, man. You got all the right recipes to keep it rolling. Like, the only thing that would be like not so good as if your wife was like not down with it, you know. Like,
actually, she's doing a little bit of intermittent fasting too, and she is she's been working at getting, building herself to run and be better conditioned. She has fibromyalgia, so she just gets these real pains and stuff all the time, and it's actually helping with her.
Oh,
you know, some of that, you know, she's not really having as much of that now. So it's actually pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, now that you're going to be ripped, lean and mean and back to your Marine fighting weight.
I hope so.
So what do you got going on for the rest of the year? You said you got a tournament tomorrow and you've been pre-fishing for that.
Yes, sir. I pre-fished for that. We had a lot of, about a week and a half, we had a major rain event here, about, you know, 7 to 9 inches in spots. So a lot of my backwater areas with some, you know, back lakes and marshy areas really got flushed really bad with a lot of fresh water that have drainage systems like creeks and some smaller rivers that flow into these back bays. And some of those just got ruined. So I had to like readjust, and I went down and fished some grass flats in the in Laguna Madre around Corpus Christi and kind of stumbled on some fish yesterday. So that's what we're doing tomorrow. We're going in full stream, putting all eggs in one basket right there and fishing some of the flats, just make long drifts, you know, just burning a spoon. Basically, is all we're going to be doing, burning spoons over these sand pockets and stuff. There's a lot of floating grass in there at times. So really top water is out of the question. So I'll have a spoon, a small spinner bait with a plastic, and then probably a pop of cork with a shrimp imitation just to... Mm-hmm. You know, burn it up, just cover a lot of water. And that's about it. Cause with the way the wind's going to be, the sight cast is going to be out of the question. You're just going to have to cover water and just fan cast and just blind cast a fool out of it.
Yeah. Well, that was one of our ways that we ended up catching some fish in Texas on the redfish tournaments. When we went there, we went to a Port Aransas tournament, and that's where we did, sir, just like what you're talking about, got over the grass flats and just drifted, no trolling motor, mm-hmm, nothing, just drifting, mm-hmm, along and just making as many casts as you possibly could. And that's how we caught most of our fish that we weighed, you know. I mean, like, we tried the sight fishing and everything, and there's some beautiful water down there, man. That looked as much like flamingo kind of, like, where we fish as anything. I mean, the tournament that we did before that was in Kema, Texas, and man,
yes, sir,
talk about not knowing what to do. That water was so we came from the beautiful clear Florida Keys water, and we go and we show up there, and I was just like, what are we going to do? I have no idea how to fish here. I mean, the water, literally, yeah, you couldn't see a millimeter into the water. It was so dirty, but those guys knew how to catch fish. I mean, they knew how to catch fish in, mm-hmm, that water. I was just blown away that you could catch anything in the catfish, anything in that water. And, but they did, man, they knew how to do it. And then some people figured out how to run to Sabine, and there was clear water over there, and there was beautiful water over there. That was real nice. But then, yeah, when we got down to Port Aransas, I mean, I was like, okay, now we're talking. This is nice here. I mean, that's a nice area. All that down there.
It is really cool. I do like fishing the flats, but you know, I have a place close to my heart in this back marsh, backwaters over here. And I do a lot. It's a lot of visual, though, with the, you know, surface activity, you know, fleeing bait fish and shrimp or birds. You know, the birds are a big key for the redfish, you know, especially those white, you know, herons or little, mm-hmm, cranes or whatever. Yeah. There's not really social birds. So if they're all piled up and playing hopscotch over each other, they're chasing shrimp, they're getting pushed by redfish, and you need to beeline over there.
Yeah.
So that plays a lot of factor into that too, in this water over here in the back marshes that might not be as clear. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that tournament. I got some bass stuff coming up. I think we have my Southeast Texas Trail has an event on Sam Rayburn, and then the weekend after, the Hobie Bass Open is on Sam Rayburn in Texas here. I'm not sure if I'm going to make that one. And then I know we're supposed to have a live event on the Gulf Coast region through Kayak Saltwater Series, but that's to be determined. And then just wrap up the year with the Professional Redfish League, the saltwater tournaments. I have two more. I've got to stop in Matagorda and stop in Corpus Christi. And then the Redfish World Series for the kayaks will be in October. And then a Redfish National Championship for the Kayak Saltwater Series will be in Gulf Shores in November. So, you know, there's a few more tournaments here and there. I got a trout event at the end of this month too, Saltwater Survival Series. Yeah. I need to look at my schedule.
It's pretty busy, and then
ICAST. If I can get away to Orlando, I have an option to go there with a few different companies. So I'll possibly be at ICAST. I'm looking forward to kicking back off this year. As last year we missed out.
And, I know.
And no, if you hadn't ever been to that, if anybody is listening, man, it's like a kid in a candy store.
It is. Well, if you get there, man, let's hook up and meet in person for sure. That'll be great.
Sir,
we'll definitely be there, and there'll be all sorts of stuff going on there. So you must have, like, you got my interest peaked, because you must have a pretty interesting job. You said you got these 12-hour shifts, you're doing all this stuff, but then it also gives you enough freedom and time to go and fish all of these different tournaments. So what is it that you do for a living?
I work at a petrochemical plant. I'm a process operations. I run the equipment. Even if I'm working in the field, I'm out there making adjustments on valves, taking readings, pulling samples, stuff like that. I mainly work inside now. I run the whole process through a computer system, you know, monitoring levels, pressures, temperatures, different things like that, flow rates and stuff like that, and running the equipment. So I work a split shift. It's days and nights. I work 14 days out of 28, but it's all split. You know, I get a 7-day off break every 4 weeks. So I do work 2 weekends out of the month, and I'm off 2 weekends out of the month. So I got to pick and choose my vacation days to kind of cover stuff. But a lot of the times I'm off and don't need to take any days off at all.
Wow.
So it does work out pretty cool. And then my wife's a teacher, so I get to fish a lot during the week. You know, my wife's a teacher. My daughter's in school. So during the week, if, you know, there's less pressure on the water anyways, most of the time, you know.
Right.
So it's good to be able to get away during the week, or if I can get out a few hours after a graveyard shift, you know, I'll fish for a few hours and sacrifice sleep just to go get on some fish, you know.
Right. Yeah, of course. So did you notice a surge in anglers and angling pressure, especially with the kayak world post COVID or during COVID?
Yes, sir. Tremendously.
Really? Tremendously.
A lot of new people entered the sport. Just the growth alone is insane. I mean, in the industry right now, you're having logistics problems with the manufacturing companies, like with the backups at the ports, with the containers, mm-hmm. stuff. They can't get the pieces and parts. Like, say you can't get a seat frame in, they've been waiting on them. Say you can't get these straps in. Say you can't get these tracks in that you're going to use to mount accessories. It's across the board. I'm associated with Jackson Kayak. I'm on their factory team, and I'm also the team manager for the South region of the country. And from that standpoint, we're seeing, you know, dealers are affected by orders getting reduced. And it's not just certain companies, it's across the board. It's just the demand is so high right now for people wanting to get outside. Mm-hmm. And it started last year. Like when all this first hit, it was just like, man, what's going to happen? Are we, you know, right. How's everything going to turn out? And the industry just went through the roof. I mean, everybody had banner years last year, you know, crazy.
Yeah, it is. So tell me about your podcast. Is part of it kind of education based, like for all these new anglers? Are you taking it upon yourself to be a source of information and ethics and kind of behavior of new anglers? Like when you have this big surge of people that come in, this has been something that's been kind of on my mind, and I've been talking about it here on my podcast and stuff, but like, you know, a lot of people don't have any idea what to do, what's right, what's wrong, what's good behavior, what's bad behavior. Just wondering kind of if you guys are taking it upon yourself to talk about those things.
Oh, yes, sir, for sure. And try to be a good steward of the sport, you know, especially representing some of the companies and stuff you do. You have to, you know, in benefiting those companies from you promoting them, you have to, you know, like I said, be a good steward. So it is. We you know, we like to focus on tips and tactics, you know, safety standpoints, you know, not everywhere is required to wear a PFD, but it's going to be on me at all time, no matter if the water's 3 feet or 7 foot or 10 foot, you know. In the Marine Corps, I did actually do a lateral move, you know, at the end of my stretch there, and I did water survival instruction and did swim qualifications and everything. So I've always been around the water, you know, with the surfing and everything. And it is just a second home to me. I love the water. And being that, I still will have my PFD on. I don't know what's going to happen on the water. Something could fall out of the sky and hit me in the head and knock me out, you know. Right. And that's just the what ifs, you know, whatever. But the main thing is just, you know, promoting that safety on the water. You know, float plans come into play on bigger trips or offshore trips, you know, it just tips and tactics, organization. We have some stuff on there. I like to get into that with my guests, you know, different regions, different fisheries in different regions, and talk about what's worked there and how it would work elsewhere where they could branch out. And then, you know, I'll, you know, put out little surveys for listener questions and things like that to kind of see what they want to hear. You know, we'll have a segment on, you know, trophy trout, or we'll have a segment on, you know, tournament prep or things like that, you know. So it's actually pretty cool, you know. I'm part of the Paddle and Fin Network, so you say. I think we have 8 episodes. We just did join the Waypoint TV family, and that's how we connected. So I appreciate you reaching out with that also.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. Yeah, my segment's called Chasing the Tide. It's just kind of fitting because I do cover more of the saltwater side of the kayak angling. And, you know, it's been a great ride so far. I've been doing this, I think this is my almost a year and a half I've been doing the podcast now with under Chasing the Tide's name. And, you know, like my wife says, she's like, you know, you could talk the paint off of the wall.
Well, you're going to be a good podcaster.
So, you know, sometimes I get a little excited. I talk fast, you know, my Georgia and Texas meld of accent with the little Hawaiian slang thrown in my trips with people out. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's good, man. You got a lot of enthusiasm and obviously a lot of good information too. So the Paddle and Fin, the way that works, like somebody would subscribe to Paddle and Fin and then your show, your segment is going to come out on a certain day, or can they subscribe to your show only?
No, you subscribe for Paddle and Fin, just Paddle and the letter N and then Fin. And then our shows rotate. Mine is bi-weekly on a Sunday. Mine comes out every 2 weeks.
Okay.
You know, and then we have some segments on the outdoors. We have segments about destinations. We have a hunting segment. We have a bass fishing for news. We have some gear review, tournament update podcast, and then like the OG show was the original show that started out, you know, and it's pretty cool. We got quite the plethora of information.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds good, man. I mean, sounds awesome. I'm glad you guys are over there and look forward to catching up on some of your shows and nice to get together and meet you. I look forward to meeting all you guys at ICAST. That'll be great. Is the whole crew coming?
I think there's quite a few of the guys start trying to make it down. I know some of the guys on some of the other kayak brands, pro staffs are going to come down with some of those crews. I know as part of the being in the media and podcasting and stuff like that, we have an opportunity to go down there with that also. So if we had to, you know, we could do that, but I know there's a few of them that are heading down. I hope to see some of the guys down there myself. Yeah. It's not often we get to meet up and all be together. You know, we did last October, we all went to and fished Del Hollow
in
Tennessee, chasing smallmouth and had a little small tournament and a meetup, had a little good time. So that's fun. And then, you know, it's just hard to get everybody together at the right time, you know, with families and vacations and different times, just try to get hard to get it lined out. But I hope we can get together again soon. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll happen at ICAST. I'm looking forward to everything kind of getting back to normal a little bit. I mean, two weekends in a row, we've had full houses for the UFC. Well, one weekend in Florida, the UFC had a fight there, and it was a full house. No masks, no seat between anyone. Full house. That's the first thing that I've seen like that, really since last year. So that was really nice to see, and. You know, in the state of Florida is probably the most open state yet. But, you know, I hope that we're all moving towards getting back to normal and having, you know, in-person events like we were doing before, before COVID, without everybody being freaked out about it or getting sick.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. The cool thing about the kayak tournaments is starting to get back towards all the in-person stuff and the bigger captain's meetings and this and that. But for a while there, we were just running virtual meetings, like via Facebook Live or via YouTube or something like that. And then, you know, you're submitting everything online. So it's basically you're fishing a tournament and you're just, you know, that's part of it. You're not really getting that interaction. And that, like I said before, that was the whole draw, was the camaraderie and talking to everybody afterwards. Hey, what worked for y'all? And everybody's usually pretty cool about sharing information. And that's what a lot of the grassroots clubs, the newbies coming in, that's what they all have said, is like, man, just, you know, he talked about, you know, he fed us information and talked about what was working. You know, there's a lot of secretive stuff in some of these, you know, some tournaments at times, but then there's a lot of guys that will share everything with you, you know?
Right. Well, tournaments are a great way to really speed up your learning. I mean, if you're a pretty good angler, that's a way to be a great angler. And if you're a great angler, it's a way to eat a slice of humble pie and realize that there's a lot more to learn out there, because, man, I don't care who you are, how good you think you are, you get in those very competitive environments with people from different places and different backgrounds and different skill sets. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I thought I knew what I was doing, but turns out those guys are really good. And then, you know, you figure out what they're doing, and then you add that to your skill set. And then now, you know, you get a lot better very, 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 very quickly. So I'm an advocate for tournaments. I think that it certainly is the fastest way to get better as an angler or guide, you know, both. But anyway, yes, sir. Well, listen, man, it's been great talking to you. I really wish you luck on the tournaments that you're about to do, and super congratulations on taking your health back into your control. That's awesome, man. That's really something to be proud of, and you're doing awesome with it.
Thank you. Thank you much. Now, I appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
I had a new show I had to go catch up on. I'm trying to play catch up on all the saltwater experience stuff too. And then your podcast is in my rotation now too. So
right on,
you know,
man.
Like I said, with that Waypoint TV, we got a lot of access to everything, you know, so much information on there. It's just like, man, I got a lot of, you know, windshield time coming up for traveling. I said, man, I found the mother load.
you have. There's a lot, man. We're adding more shows all the time over there, but it's the mother load. So let me know if you guys want to do something else together. We'll make that happen. Oh, but man, good luck, and let me know how it goes, and let's definitely hook up at iCast.
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Thanks. We'll see you, Dustin.